Mickey Hart here, you're listening to GAR Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Monday. Colin here is here as usual. I want to say hello to all our YouTube viewers. Our special guest this Monday, Keane, isn't here again. It's Tomás Corrigan. Welcome to the show, Tomás.
Thanks, Colin.
Now, we're going to let you actually talk today. And the reason right. I bring that up is because poor Lee Keegan was on the RT show on Saturday. And I felt sorry for him. This is a man, the best wing back of his generation. James McCarthy might have a word to say about that as well. And he was just talked down to the point where Lee Keegan had lost heart and just started butting in with kind of stuff that was, it wasn't his best kind of work, you know, that kind of. So don't worry, Tomás. Yeah. We're going to let you, give you loads of time to talk.
I'll but jump Lee on there, Tomás, and take this one. That was horrible. Everyone wanted to hear what Lee Keegan had to say.
And Brawley ended up telling him, like, making a point and saying, you'll know this, Lee, you're playing, while he continues to make, instead of going, Lee, what do you think of this whole thing? Like, the dynamic, the egos on that show is out of control, isn't it?
Yeah. They're all fighting to get their wee tuppence worth in, but to be honest, I don't really watch the analysis in RT because it's poor. Like, they don't really analyse the match. They just kind of pontificate and kind of throw out kind of sweeping statements. They don't actually analyse the match, so yeah. Far prefer the Sky Sports coverage. You know, the proper analysts on it.
Yeah,
you
know, Sky have the best analysts. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Oh no, like I was watching it yesterday, and just see Jim McGuinness. Like, you're hanging on his every word. He was just so on the money. They might go overboard on some of the analysis. I think they're trying to, like, sometimes Peter Canavan, like his analysis is great, but he's been asked to, like, really analyse a match in, like, during the match. Like, he'd need to go away for a couple of days and look at it different angles to give what Sky are asking him to give. But so he's trying to do something that is, I think, impossible. But no, I think Sky is definitely the sleeker of the two. Like, I far prefer watching it.
The problem is that RT is completely personality driven, and there's no personality in Sky. It's almost like from one extreme to the other. Whereas, like, surely there's a middle ground here. And I agree with you with Canavan. I do love the way they show how both teams are setting up. That's the basic analysis at halftime. I think you do need a couple of days to properly get into analysis. But, like, I mean, surely Sky is just so dull, though. They're brilliant analysts. And, like, I love James Horne, Jim McGuinness, Peter Canavan. There's nothing about
There's no crack.
It's not even crack. There's no debate. The presenters are terrified for debate to happen in case they get dragged into somewhere they're not comfortable. Like, I mean,
yeah, debate's the thing. And, like, that doesn't help with the structure that they have with Jim just sitting with Rachel getting interviewed, basically. And then Peter over with Brian just getting interviewed and nobody really to come back.
The thing is, so if Jim says something incredibly interesting in that one question Rachel will ask him, it doesn't matter a hoot because they have to go across to Peter next. You just know it's so formulaic and sterile. But anyways, I didn't want to get into that mess. I want to give out about something else because it was going to be given out. But, like, I mean, Jesus, it's a huge disappointment coming off that weekend of Super 8. Like, I mean, Saturday was bad enough. Tyrone Hammer and Roscommon, not Tyrone's fault. Roscommon were deplorable. We'll talk about all the four games, two in part two, and then we'll get into the other two in performance of the weekend. But the crowds weren't even turning out. So we'd only 50,000, 55,000 or 53, whatever, around the early 50s. This is Dublin Donegal. This is the Leinster champions versus the Ulster champions, right? And it's doubling up with Roscommon and Tyrone, two very traditionally well-supported teams, and you've got 50,000 in total. What's the problem here, lads? Like, I mean, the Super 8s, is it because it's not knockout? It's because you've a home game the following week? All these things adding up? Or are people starting to get sick of Gaelic football? I'm starting to think it's a combination of everything.
Yeah, well, like, it's funny, like, it's called the Super 8s, and it's almost funny in how ironic that name is after the first round, because it was anything far from super. Like, the games were, like, that, the Kerry Galway game, like, I was watching it. I was at a wedding on Saturday, so I was dying of a hangover on Sunday, and I wanted something to take my mind off the kind of, you know, the thoughts of the night before. Like, it was terrible. Like, only I was coming on, knew I was coming on here today, I would have turned it off. Like, the The first 20 minutes were just awful, and the World Cup was on as well, so I wanted to turn that on, but I kept watching it, and it was God, it was bad.
Yeah,
but like if that was Fermanagh or someone playing, we'd be getting slated for it. That, you know, off Fermanagh, we need a 2-tier championship. It's so bad. Like, but that was Kerry and Galway. Like, and these teams get a free ride, you know, most of the year. Like, and I need to call them out. Like, it was a really bad game. But I was reading today in the Irish Independent. It was Eamon Sweeney was talking about. He referred to, you know, the crowd as being at the Kerry match as being like a. Like a child eating a vegetable that they didn't want to eat, like, and that Gaelic football was now the kale of sport. Like, it's just so boring and drab. Yeah. And I think now, like, sorry, the Gaelic now, it's like the defences are just so well organised at this stage that, you know, everyone's back and the defences are so good that to get through the defence, patience is the name of the game.
Yeah.
So if you're watching it and teams now. To be successful, have to be patient. Like that's terrible to watch.
It's
like,
sideways passing. It's backwards passing. You're getting a free. It's going backwards to your spare man. There's an awful lot of hand passing. Afraid to commit to the tackle, so coming back out and going across. The crowd can't engage in it, lads. I've seen enough football this year to know that the crowd cannot get into this. There's no atmosphere on the ground. So I don't know what the solution is. Incidentally, there was 82,000 last year at Dublin Monaghan. And that was a quarter final, and that was doubled up with Tyrone and Armagh. So very similar. So maybe the Super 8s did take away from it, the fact that supporters and others three, the ticket prices are fairly high. So maybe they're not going. But like, I mean, like Saturday people were saying this is underwhelming start, and then Sunday's as bad as it was. Like, I mean, it was the conditions, you would say, like, was like a bar of soap. But like, I mean, it was hard to play in. So when you combine the modern game, and like, let's be honest, the modern game is every team is defending with 13 players. Now the different ways they end up getting the players back there. Fermanagh might go a bit more extreme and go ahead of the ball and bring one more back and leave one forward. But Kerry, Dublin, all the teams are ending up with everybody bar two players on the other end. Now, sometimes, like Kerry and Galway yesterday, Kerry were dragged back there because Galway players were just attacking. So, anyways, it doesn't matter how they all ended up back there. That's the modern game now, where you're stuck in these stalemates. The crowd aren't getting into it. You can hear the players shouting on the field. It's dull. It's dull. And it's shit. Honestly, it's shit. And this is coming from someone who... I don't want to say that. Like, I mean, it gives me no joy in saying that.
But it was shit last year as well. Like, you went to Croke Park and Armagh, Tyrone were going to do this. Monaghan were going to do this against Dublin. So three of the four teams were all going to do it. But the crowd still came out. So I don't think that football, the way it's gone, or what, like, I don't think that's a reason for the attendances dropping. I do think it's this knockout scenario. It's not a knockout anymore. There's three games. Yeah, like, people will have a home game. They go see them at a closer venue. And also just the apathy around Dublin. You knew Dublin were going to win. Like, it's like, I'll see them in the semi-final. Like, there's no nothing on the line here. They're going to get through the Super 8s. We'll bring it back in the last four.
Yeah,
I think that's why the attendances are down for this. They will be bigger overall because there's obviously more games.
Because there's more games. Yeah, but like, I mean, then you have Dublin playing keep ball, right? So this is something like, you see little clips of it every now and then. But Dublin took it to an extreme, obviously started by Kieran Kilkenny, who absolutely loves this kind of thing. Like, I mean, he was back to his pointing best and
winding up a hand pass.
He started it. He dropped back out the field and he started it, and then Fenton got involved and they all got involved. And I don't criticise Dublin for that, because they were 5 points up. Donegal weren't engaging in the tackle, and they're like, let's see if you want the ball back, come out and get it. But still, it was ugly to watch again. And if this is the modern game now, Tomás, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't want to sound like Joe Brolly. Joe Brolly's actually turning, like, he's just turning into a bit of a pain now, because all he does is talk about it. And there's no motivation for teams to change, right? Because it makes sense to protect your house, right? And it makes sense to commit bodies to defend in numbers and attack in numbers, and that's the modern game. So I'm not blaming managers for doing it. Managers will always do it, because that's obviously like the correct thing to do to win the game. But surely somebody needs to take a step back and look and see what product that is, though, what that's given the fans, because from what I see, there's no atmosphere at these matches.
Yeah, well, like, couple of years ago, I was it the Olympics was on. I was watching the Olympic handball. Do you know the inside handball?
Yeah.
And I was thinking, that's exactly what Gaelic is now, because it's just everyone defends and everyone there's a little pass across, back, and then one lad gets it, and then he goes and tries to make an inroad. It's the same in Gaelic. Everyone goes up the pitch, and it's back and forwards, and then someone makes a little dart, and then he gets a score, and it's so boring.
Like, yeah. So even when the score goes over, there's not a huge applause because it's almost like you've been bored so much at how it's been kind of worked.
Yeah, that's it. Like, and God, like when I started playing, you know, it was obviously kind of 15-on-15, and you put probably your best players up in the forwards for them to get scores, and like that's where, you know, like your personality dictated where you wanted to play, because you wanted to be kind of going and flamboyant. So I wanted to be the lad who's getting on the end of the scores. But now, like if you want to have the biggest impact in a game, it's wing half back that you want to be starting out at, not corner forward, because a corner forward now only gets maybe 3 or 4 touches a half, and you know a lot of them you might have 3 lads hanging out of you, so,
and you're cycling it, yeah.
Yeah, so like for me, if someone was starting Gaelic football now and they were the best player, I'd be putting them back wing half back or trying them out in maybe midfield, even though they're not that, they mightn't be that tall, but it doesn't matter now because a lot of kickouts are going short and stuff. So no, it's I don't know what they're going to do. Like at the minute it's just not fun to watch. It's boring.
Sorry, just to cut you off, but it's probably not fun to play either, because like, I mean, you for the last 5, 6, 7 years, you and Sean Quigley are seen as the two scorers. Now obviously Seamus came in this year, and you're thinking, well, there's your starting point with Fermanagh, right? So you've got 3 forwards that a lot of counties would absolutely love to have, finishers, scorers. You've got the speed, you can get out in front, the lads have a bit of size, lovely little balance, and you and Sean are sitting on the bench against Kildare, like, while working players on the field are kicking bloody wides, not even under pressure. Like, me and Conan laughed about this last Monday at the actual, like, where is the mindset? Like, I mean, what are you thinking when you're a scoring forward in a system like that? Like, I mean,
yeah, no, like, it's not just for Manor, like that's across the board, that like the kind of the scoring forward, as if you want to call it that, it kind of, there's winners and losers basically in that sort of a system, and the losers are like the scoring forward will be sacrificed for someone who can get back and defend and, you know, clog the space.
The winners are the losers who can just track back better than everybody else.
Your words, not mine.
Yeah.
But it's just, to get back to your point, like the Gaelic at the minute, it's a dull, boring watch. And as I was saying, the World Cup was on, the World Cup final was on, and I really wanted to turn it on. I was actually flicking back and forth because I wasn't missing much in the Kerry and Galway match. Yeah. So, what do they do? Like, what can you implement new rules? Like, what?
Well, I'm glad you said that, right? Because of a few things put down here, right? So we talked about this before. There's too much hand passing. That's a huge problem. If you cut out that hand passing, you obviously can't sit as deep as you do because you can't work it out as easily through the hands. You have to leave forwards up there to have that kick option. Now, Pat McEnany told me, and I said this recently, is that I sent him a text and asked him how difficult is it to police that, because they do it in compromise rules. He says, not even any bit difficult, it's easy. You just count them out loud as they're being done,
yeah.
And everyone's aware, right, you're on number 4, you're only allowed 5, a better kick it, or whatever right. The restriction. That's one. You could ban backwards free kicks. Like, they're an eyesore. That's just heading back, the easy option, and to rebuild all over again.
Well, how practical is that? Does the other team, say, has a load of bodies back, and then you're forcing them to kick forward when it's the other team's fault, say, like, you know, where you're looking for someone to
I'm not saying that's going to help systems change. It's going to make sure that maybe that sweeper should be up ahead of the ball and not to be as, you know what I mean, keeping men back behind it, or that option for the free kick. That everything has to be positive. I haven't thought these through absolute 100%, but a forward free kick and not back, they're going back to the goalkeeper sometimes. Like, I mean, right, another one. You can't bring the ball back into your own half. That's basketball. When you actually cross the halfway line, you can't go back. That would stop what Dublin did. You see, and again, I don't want to punish Dublin because that wasn't Dublin's fault. That was Donegal's fault. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then there's free kicks, all right, forward. Then a forward can't leave their own half unless they're chasing someone. Now, that's probably more difficult. Like, you could do a whole show on these rules talking around them. I'm just even opening them up here, that they're obviously are little things that can be done to make the game more positive. As it stands now, all the game is favouring defensive football. Let's give, and I mentioned an offensive mark before, where if you catch a high ball inside the 21, you have a mark and a free shot at goal. That will encourage kick passing, long balls. It will actually reward the forward for winning it, like midfielders now are rewarded with a mark, and that would improve the game. I think there's loads of little things that can be done, like tweaks, if the appetite is there. I think we've reached a point, lads, where there's something has to be done. The balance is all in the defender's favour, not the forwards, and it's terrible. Terrible to watch. Don't take my word for it. Go to bloody Crow Park and just hear players shouting on the field, because nobody's involved in it or interested in it.
I can't disagree with any of that.
Yeah.
Spot on. I like the one, the offensive mark, because that would encourage players to kick the ball in.
Yeah.
And, you know, it can favour the kind of the taller players, would also favour the faster players who can get out in front. There definitely needs to be something, because it's not just this year. It has been over the last number of years that, like, you go to a match or you'd watch a match and the first half would just be so boring. Like, and it would only ever liven up maybe in the last 15 minutes whenever it's right where it's knockout. Like,
and when everyone's tired.
Yes, and the game is then exciting by virtue of the fact that, okay, there's going to be a winner and loser here. Not because of the quality, and you might get a bit of quality thrown into it, but I think the excitement then comes from just the kind of knockout nature of this last 15 minutes and the championship quarter, they call it. But, like, it's just it's an ordeal sometimes to sit through some of the matches.
What's it like to play through one of the matches?
Like, it's not too bad because you're focused and stuff, and you're thinking of your job, but then, like, it's hard to watch a match back. Like, you're like, geez, did people actually watch this? It's hard to watch.
Yeah, and then, like, the argument obviously is here all the time that, like, I mean, look at the joy the young people in Fermanagh got this year. Look at Carlow, they're filling out Dr. Cullen Park now and they're doing that, and I accept all that. So I'll never tell a manager, you have to change, you have to do something differently, because that's not fair.
The rules has to stay with them.
Yeah, I think like Joe Brolly genuinely thinks that if he keeps rabbiting on about this, the manager are going to go, oh well, I must do what Joe, like, I mean, they're laughing at Joe. It's not like the managers, inter-county managers and players are laughing at him. Like, they're not, just talking about this, no one's going to change, because it's more effective to play that way. Now, obviously, maybe Fermanagh and Carlow have gone way too extreme on it, but every team is playing like this. Even the great Kerry and Dublin teams are getting that many men back, because it makes sense to defend with more numbers but attack, you know, with almost the equal amount of numbers. So, like, I mean, the idea here is not to keep mouthing on about and talking about that. It needs little rule changes. And then the managers will all have to play within those new rules, and they're favouring forward play a little bit more. Like, I mean, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, and, like, I'm not against, like, little tweaks either. I just wouldn't want, you know, wholesale mass changes. Because the game, like, you know, it was only last week you were raving about Armagh-Roscommon being one of the best games you've ever
seen.
See,
they're two managers that kind of, like, I mean, they're an exception to the rule. And I think that was more, like, McGeaney and the fact that Roscommon can't defend. Like, I mean, there was a combination of two things there.
But then, like, you know, just even, like, you go to club games with a minor match, you go, like, there are, like, class games still going on within these rules. It's not just sort of, maybe it is a bit of an epidemic, but the game isn't dead. It's only getting stronger. Players are getting better and fitter.
If you look, Conan, I agree with you on that one. I'm never going to say that the game that I played in the late 90s and 2000s and harp on about that.
Yeah.
The game now is more skillful, and the strength and conditioning and the fitness is on a superior level. I look back to a Leinster final on that Paddy O'Shea documentary that we played against Westmeath, and I was like, that looked like a challenge game. It wasn't proper. There was no speed. So it's much better now. It just needs a few tweaks to bring that more traditional shape that we had back then and plant the modern game into that, where players are just much better now. And, like, I mean, that would definitely... Yeah.
No, but I think the tweaks need to be more conditions. Like, the condition games we play where you say hand passes, so five hand passes and then move it on, or three, whatever it is. But
that could fix everything.
I think it's, like, sort of tactical or positional things isn't really fair. Like, teams should be allowed to be defensive and, you know, sort of messing with where players should be allowed to go. It would just get a bit messy.
Yeah.
If we brought in
the hand pass them on and the offensive mark, just two new changes, and let's trial them.
I'll meet you halfway with that.
Yeah. Well, I'd be happy happy with two of them. They're my two favourite ones anyway. On a lighter note, lads, it's almost funny now when you get a Dublin interview. So Niall Scully was interviewed after the scoring two goals. Now imagine the thrill of scoring two goals. You scored a goal in the hill and you all celebrated, didn't you? And Sean Quigley and all.
Give out to me for that.
Oh yeah, you really enjoyed your goal into
the
hill.
I loved it. It was brilliant. Yeah, sure.
But I got a goal into hill 16 before. It was like this, like what a feeling.
Yeah.
But Niall Scully got one anyway. So not only did he not celebrate in the field, that's not his way. And so he's interviewed afterwards, and the interview was 40 seconds long by the time they started talking to him. So the first question was that your two goals were crucial in the game, which is fair enough. And he almost kind of lost himself for a second, and he talked through the first one a little bit, played it down a bit, then kind of said, played the second one down even more. I was just thrown across to me, I feel, and then I scored it. Then realised he'd spoken about himself for maybe 15 seconds and went, well, it's all about the team at the end of the day, and we know that that performance won't be good enough against Tyrone going forward. And then he was asked another question. He says, well, we only take every game at we take it one game at a time or whatever. And I was like, Jesus, Jim Gavin would be backslapping him when he goes back in. They're clearly media managed. Like like Dean Rock was out in the field after the game, and he was asked a question about Dublin throwing the ball around, I think it was. And Dean just completely brushed the question. Like, the interviewer didn't pick him up on it, but he just answered a different question. Like, I mean, and with the same stuff. Well, it's one game at a time, and this won't be good enough for Tyrone. It's like, then you see the Limerick hurlers interviewed after beating Kilkenny, and they're just real. They're just humans, and they're not giving anything away. But, like, I feel a bit of an emotional attachment to Limerick hurlers now because of the way they play and the fact that they all seem kind of likeable sort of fellas that are clearly delighted that they beat Kilkenny. How hard is it to act like that?
Well, I think I have a bit of sympathy now with Dublin. I think over the years, maybe the last 10 or before sort of the Dublin team won the All-Ireland, they kind of got a bit of guff from the media, and they were kind of seen as all the media men here. Yeah. So I think they probably said, right here, do you know what? Let's sort of manage this a wee bit better, and maybe they felt that's what they've had to do. They've had to, you know, train or give the players training in how to, you know, give these cliches all the time and give journalists stuff to just kind of keep them happy, and they can write a few things. But like, there's no, you're right. Like, you'd love to just, for Niall Scully, just say, yeah, no, it was a great feeling. You know, there's so much pressure coming in. I really wanted to do well, but like, he's not going to say that because it doesn't fit into Jim's grand master plan. And so it's not his fault. Like,
he's
not on the party line, and that's what he has to do. I always remember that, you know, people, that was the criticism of Dublin, you know, that they couldn't get over the line, the All-Irelands, because they were too fond of the media. So they've cracked the whip, and this is the result. This is what we're having to listen to. And it's just like, yeah, you know, look at two teams going at it, and, you know, Donegal, we're a good side, and we knew coming here today. And it's just like, here, come on.
Like, I love the way he kind of tilts his head like Jim there and all. Yeah, you've thought about that.
Maybe Niall's just a shy fella.
Not, apparently. Well, he's meant to be a bit of a character. And, like, I mean, even something like, geez, I grew up seeing Bernard Brogan scoring, and to be able to score into the hill, it's a dream come true. And like, I mean, what's wrong with saying, like, just be normal, you know? And I do take the point with Dublin that I don't think any of us can even appreciate the spotlight that's on these lads, and anything they say can get blown up. So, but I always say it's not a media versus Dublin thing. It's not that I'm disappointed. Like, this is supporters watching this. Like, and it's the whole idea, like, Dublin are admired right throughout the country because they're just a phenomenal team. But are they loved? Because, you know, I don't know. Like, I mean, unless they start letting that guard down a little bit, I'm not sure if they can be loved by neutrals.
Yeah, but I don't know if anybody would be loved if you keep winning as much as they're winning either.
Yeah,
like, everyone just wants to see them lose. Like, Niall Scully, maybe the fans, like, I know I did felt you said about emotional connection with Limerick. I started warming to him a bit more because of his goal. You know, never mind the interview. I was like, geez, what? Like, I've been talking about Jim McConnelly and how they're not going to replace him and they need a bit more quality. And then suddenly, I was like, shit, this boy's just taken from the sideline.
Yeah, Scully and Howard are unbelievable. We'll talk about that now in the next part. There's no doubt about that. Just one other quick one. Two other quick ones. Peter Canavan said Daniel Flynn didn't mean that goal. I think he's off his head. Yeah, this is Daniel Flynn we're talking about here. This is just a player who'll do anything. I think the fact that he kicked it off the inside of his foot, Peter might have thought he was trying to tap it over, but taking that extra solo and going around the man, knew exactly what he was doing there, right?
Yeah, no. I did think at the time, oh, did he actually mean that? I asked myself, but no, he did. Like, he, like, as you were saying, he took them on, and he is liable to do the unpredictable, do you know, and he definitely meant it. Well, yeah, only he can answer that, but I thought he meant it.
Yeah, he wouldn't have gone that far if he wanted to tap over a pint.
Yeah.
Do you know, he wouldn't have gone around that last man.
And he had it was a cribbin who had an open net. He looked at him and then he said, I'll just put it on myself. Like, yeah, and he pulls it back across and it's over to keeper. No, he definitely meant.
Yeah. One other quick one before we get into the matches is that one thing that just I find bizarre, right? And this is from the likes of Kerry, right? So they've got this huge aggressive press, right? So they trust their midfield to win the kick out. They're trying to force another team to go along, right? So this mad planning going into making the other team go along because you have an advantage there. And then on their own kickouts, they're messing with it and putting it out over the line. It's like they don't trust what they're trying to force the other team. It doesn't make any sense, does it? If you fancy that you've an advantage in midfield and you've put so much work into making sure the opposition put it there, but then when you have your kickout, you're completely disregarding this advantage and you're trying to be fancy with the kickouts. Do you know what I mean? Is there a weird kind of thing going on there?
That's bizarre. The only kind of reason I think they might be trying to get it away short, because if you get away short, you're 100% guaranteed the possession, obviously. But
yeah, they won 10 of their 27 kickouts. Or no, 10? 10, no, sorry, they lost 10 after 27. 3 of them went out over the sideline. It's just, I just don't understand it. And when you go short with a kick out, I should have left this for the second part. When you go short with a kick out, you're guaranteed to face a defensive screen the other end, because you're given you can only work it down kind of, you know, through the hand or whatever. Like, I mean, so you're not going to get joy the other end if you go short with your kick out.
And you saw the pressure they were under when they went short, because Galway were just hammering up into all of them then as well. And Kerry were bobbling the ball around. Like, Maher made that mistake that got Galway a goal chance.
Yeah.
On a slippy day. Slippy as well, yeah.
Makes no sense. Anyways, listen, we'll come back and we'll talk about the matches, because that does fit better into part two.
Are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed? I said, we have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us. Didn't even stir, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
Okay, so this was probably the major disappointment, lads. This is Galway, Connacht champions versus Kerry, who were running up such big scores. And I think it was more the expectation that this was going to be a classic is what kind of led to the big disappointment and the big chat we had at the start of this show. But, like, I mean, Galway were by no means the most defensive team to play this weekend. Galway, I was at the game. They left Walsh, Comer and Burke up at all times. We can almost live with that. It's not the most extreme ever. I do think the conditions, the ball was like a bar of soap. Turnovers were easy because you bring the ball into any sort of contact and you just can't secure the ball under your arm. So a lot of messing. What turned the game into an awful mess was the amount of wides, deflating wides. It's just like, I mean, you know, wides that are easy. And when you see a combination of slow build-up play and then wides, it just adds up to, my God, this is terrible stuff.
Yeah, no, I said at the start, it was maybe a wee bit harsh, but no, it was hard to watch. Just the quality overall, like the handling was poor, the shooting, as you said, was poor. It was just, it was sloppy all over, and like there was only for a couple of like real moments of quality from Ian Burke in that first half. Like it was a drab affair. Like Ian Burke was. I think did he get man of the match in the end?
Shane Walsh got it last night in the Sunday game, I think, but I don't know who got it on the live show. But that's it. Like, I mean, Burke was lively. It was that. But I think we kind of know how Galway are going to come and play. They're going to kind of turn the game into a fight, into a scrap, and have quality. Like, Kerry were almost a big letdown yesterday.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, it was Kerry's first real test of the championship, and you know, after their win over Cork, they were being lauded as, you know, Kerry, here we go, like Kerry are the team to challenge Dublin. And yesterday they just looked like they had no energy. They looked like they weren't hungry for it. Galway were just Galway now, to me, they out Tyrone Tyrone. Like they're so good at that system, but they also have real quality in attack. And I just think I don't know what happened, Kerry. Like they just looked completely off the boil. Like their forwards didn't really click. Midfield as well looked kind of off the pace. So like they have to go to Monaghan now next week and up to Clonus, and you know Eamon Fitzmaurice will be, I think he'll be worried now this week. You know their Super 8s could be over next week.
Could be. Thing about the Galway system is, Conan, and we talked about this before, so they left three up there all the time and the Kerry defenders stayed back on them, so those three lads were never messed with.
Yeah.
Whereas on the other side you saw Kerry nearly with everybody back at times. They were following their man. I was watching this. Like, Kerry don't want Clifford and Geaney and all these lads back defending. They don't. They want at least those three inside lads to be there. They'll have their half forward line back working. But Kyne started attacking. Yeah. Kerrin started attacking. It just throws Kerry's structure so far off that they don't know whether they're coming or going.
Yeah, I can't believe they weren't set up for that the way Galway were. You three stay there, or you two, whatever it was, but like they didn't need to fall. Like, I thought it was going to be Kerry who had Galway on the string and had all these answers for them, but it was Galway. When Kyne started going, you knew what they were up to. When you saw Paul Geaney making a half-arsed forwards tackle around the midfield, you knew what was going on, and like there was time for Kerry had everybody back, and some of them weren't useful enough. If I was from Kerry, I'd be campaigning to get out of the Munster Championship as soon as possible, because what good is it to them scoring 32 points against Clare, swatting Cork aside? And then you saw it, like they just were not, tactically and intensity wise, they weren't up to the pitch of it at all.
No, they weren't. And like, I mean, even look, like I say, Shane Walsh couldn't believe his luck because Gavin White just man marked him. Like, White's a speed demon himself. He offered nothing going forward, whereas you saw with Galway and Mayo, Shane Walsh was in the half forward line trying to hold his position, but he kept having to follow Colin Boyle and all the Durkin and all these lads forward, and he was dragged out of his structure. And I was saying, lads, Shane Walsh was trying to hold that place, and yesterday he just got free rein to stand on the 45 and never have to do any defensive responsibilities, because White just kind of real old fashioned said, well, he's my man, I'm sticking on him, you know what I mean? Yeah. Where I don't know, he should have just given him something to do. And I didn't fancy White to mark Walsh. I thought Foley might mark him and leave Walsh, because Walsh is such an attacking weapon from Kerry. Like, I mean, I think Kerry got things wrong.
Yeah, like the thing about when you're man marking the opposition danger man, you have to give them something to think about. You can't give it all their own way. Like, if White had a push forward, maybe a couple of attacks, like Walsh would have been thinking, you know, do I really want to commit to this attack if this lad's going to go bursting up the pitch if we lose it? So, but the opposite happened. Shane Walsh got to do whatever he wanted, and you know, we all seen how he played. Like he was a real thorn in Kerry's side the whole game. But like, you know, Kerry, they didn't turn into bad footballers overnight. Like, they have unbelievable quality. It was just as
they struggle in that old disorganised game, because that's what the game becomes very disorganised. And if Kerry are trying to keep some sort of shape, their shape's gone, and then they're sucked into a game that they're just not comfortable in.
You've James O'Donoghue doing the Shawnee Johnson role, just running around the outside, hand passing the ball. Like, do you see that goal Daniel Flynn that we're talking about? He gets the ball on the sideline on the 45, pops it off and goes straight for goals. Drew Wiley cannot keep up with him, and he goes, that's what James O'Donoghue should have been doing. But they were all just sort of floating around,
looping around,
nobody coming in on the burst, just going down to the corner and coming back out, and nobody was taking anybody on.
But you're exactly right. But is that almost the way you discussed that game plan, Tomás, that this game is just going to become very disorganised? You know, like, are you trying to throw the other team off their kind of, say if a fullback line is attacking, like are your fullback line encouraged to attack, not even if they're not going to get the ball, but just so that they're actually dragging the other forwards completely where they don't want to be?
Yeah. So you have that element to it, that you're dragging the forwards where they don't want to be. But also, I think you mentioned it on the podcast last week. You know, if you're a forward and you're trying to take your man on, if your teammates say are providing a run, even if they know they're not going to get it, they're taking the eye off the defender off. So you're able to throw that dummy, as you were saying last week. You're able to throw the dummy, a bit of a sidestep. But if you're not committing to the attack, then you know it doesn't matter if the ball's getting up to the danger men. Like, they're just going to get three or four players around you and turn over, and then it just saps the energy out of everyone.
Yeah. No.
But like, as Conan was saying, Kerry will look at that and they'll be kicking themselves because they couldn't get up to the intensity that Galway brought, and they'll be thinking we have to bring that the next day, because it's going to be another step up again for Monaghan. They have to, James O'Donoghue go around the not the danger zone, the middle third, he needs to be making his runs, trying to take men on, and it's very hard to tackle James O'Donoghue, so go at them and you'll draw the free. But I think Kerry were they were a bit sloppy and they were a bit cumbersome in the attack, and I think it comes from playing in that Munster Championship and just not being up to the pitch of real white hot heat championship
of that level. And I think let's concentrate on Galway a little bit here. I made a comment that they could win in All-Ireland last year, and it might have sounded a little bit out there, but Galway this year have beaten Kerry and Mayo in the championship, right? That's team 2 and 3 in the country, and they gave Dublin a right scare in the league final in Croke Park, and that was their first ever time to play Dublin in that kind of atmosphere and environment, so they can improve on that. That this team is a serious outfit in that there are three fellas they leave up are all match winners in a different way. They've Heaney and Brannigan, who are two offensive and defensive wing forwards, more offensive and incredible pace, and then they have Michael Daly. They have a big strong midfield, and they're obviously their defence, which has been suspect down the years, are now getting that little bit of help. Galway are doing an awful lot of stuff right.
Yeah, and I'd say Kevin Walsh would have been creaming himself over that goal that he got, because it was the perfect transition where Eamon Brannigan gets it and he just darts through the middle. Shane Walsh is coming even faster on the left, and then he takes it on any further and it's straight on for a goal. And that starts with Kerry in the corner getting pushed out, Stephen O'Brien panicking, playing a shit pass, Galway turning it over and going. Everything they were doing was completely organised and rehearsed, and he just went through all these patterns of play for 70 minutes, whereas we mentioned we don't want to get into Kerry too much, but it was just a mess in comparison. Yeah.
Kerry have no counter-attack game as such, and White would be good on the counter-attack, but he was man-mark, and Murphy was kind of anonymous, so Kerry had nothing. But Galway's counter-attack game really started working towards the end, because Kerry started tiring, the ball was slippy, the turnovers were coming. And when Galway smelt that kind of blood and turnover, suddenly they came alive.
Yeah, well, their game is based on the counter attack, the counter attack and play. As I was saying at the start, it's Tyrone like, but they have more quality in attack than Tyrone. Someone was reading in the Independent today, it's the first time in maybe 30 years that this Galway team has beat Kerry in the championship. So
more 53
years. It takes a special team to break a hoodoo like that. So this Galway team, I think, is special. They have serious players. Comer, when Comer gets the ball, he's so powerful. He's so powerful, strong. He's fast. He's great balance. He's 2 feet. He brings other players into it. He can take a score. He goes down the barrel of the gun, and if he gets it, he's either going to score or he's going to be fouled. It's very rare that he gets turned over.
Yeah, he got a great foul there underneath the Cusack stand.
He
talk about
people,
three of them on.
He gets the crowd going.
He does. Yeah, he's that kind of player where you might be getting bored, but then Comer gets it, and he's just going to do something positive. You very rarely see Comer win the ball, loop around, and recycle it.
Yeah.
He just doesn't. Comer doesn't know how to recycle ball. And Burke, in fairness to him as well, a little live wire. He's not doing James O'Donoghue, who's coming out around the outside, and
that's not
in their DNA, these Comer and Burke, where it's not really in James O'Donoghue's DNA either. I don't know, maybe Kerry were or O'Donoghue was overthinking it, or maybe Tomás, if you're lacking a bit of confidence, do you say, geez, I better not take him on, and if I get a turnover, that's me marked out on Tuesday night on the stats or whatever? Is that in your head when you've no confidence, or why is James O'Donoghue, do you think, looping like that so much?
It's hard to know. Maybe he just doesn't back himself against a really tight defence, or maybe the Galway defensive setup is so good that he probably just didn't see any space that he could run into, and he thought, well, if I run in here, they're just going to crowd around me, and I'm going to get turned over, and then that's going to knock my confidence completely. So maybe you know, like it's whenever you're watching from the TV, you don't actually see a you know, like when you're on eye level on the pitch, you can see like how tight the defence is and how hard it is to get through. And like, I think the Galway defensive setup is just very, very good, and they have the system, you know, off to a tee at this stage, so they're going well.
They are, and I do just to make this point on their system. Like, we've seen more defensive systems than this. When you're not committing, you're only committing your midfield and your half forward line back there, right? But is that intensity and is that strength? Because you look at Roscommon, they had 13 men behind the ball, and Tyrone were just batting them away like they were like children, because they had no strength and conditioning in comparison, and they were lazy. They weren't working hard enough. So, like, I mean, the system is one thing, and even your system malfunctioned against Kildare in Navan as well, because you had players back there, but they weren't getting hands on. They weren't being honest as they should be, which is surprising for you. But, like, I mean, not you, ye.
Yeah,
but
ye.
Surprise you.
But you get me. Like, I mean, I used to be of the wavelength with Tyrone. Like, if you've got 13, 14 men back there, sure, anyone can defend like that. And there is a bit of truth in that as well. But also, it's the intensity Tyrone, like the difference in Tyrone and Roscommon, the way they tackled, and the difference with what Galway bring. Galway bring a physicality and a tackling and a work rate kind of that a lot of these teams don't do. So it is a little bit system, but it's not all system. It's all about, at the end of the day, it comes back to what it always come back to, is like honesty and willing to work.
Yeah, and that's the honesty is the best word, because the opposition need to keep those players honest as well. Even if there are 14, there's somebody there who's, you know, needs to be sort of tried out, needs to be kept honest. And like Kerry's first three scores, Kevin McCarthy came in off the flank like Niall Scully, 1-2 with Gainey over the bar, just that drive and run. Killian Young just burst through, drew two men to him, played it to Clifford over the bar. Paul Murphy did the same, Clifford over the bar. But it didn't happen enough. They weren't going at them, and maybe they were afraid, maybe they were getting hits, maybe they felt it after a while. But you could see even in the first half, like the amount of possession Kerry had, they were on the ball for a long time, whereas Galway's were just go, go, go. And like, they kicked a lot of wides as well, but their attacks usually ended with a dead ball and then they could set up again and you got that bit of a rest, whereas Kerry were just holding onto the ball and looping around and getting hit all the while.
Yeah, no, they were. So Galway definitely going in the right direction. The other match between the two provincial winners, which we're going to concentrate on, is Dublin and Donegal. Now, this was another weird game because, like, I mean, if Donegal were told before the game that Dublin would be without Dear McConnelly, well, they would have known that before the game, that Conor Callaghan would not score, that Paul Mannion would not score and get brought off, Con got brought off in injury time, and Kieran Kilkenny would only score a point, that Dublin would be very lethargic and not really look like they're up to it. And they still lost by 4 points and were down 8 at one stage. And as long as I'm like, how far off Dublin are off a fully moving Dublin team are Donegal?
Yeah, well, I suppose the first thing I'd say, like, maybe the Super 8s, they need to look at giving home advantage to the provincial winners.
Yeah, like that'd be fair, yeah.
Like, I mean, Donegal, like, won the Ulster Championship, and, you know, they should be rewarded for that, and their reward for winning the Ulster Championship, the toughest... Well, you might have disagreed with that.
No, carry on.
Willie, but like, it is a difficult championship to win, and they won that, and their reward is playing Dublin in Croke Park. So I think they definitely need to look at that. But it was a weird one, because same with most Dublin games, like you never felt that they were going to lose.
No.
Do you know, it's like they brought on, like, you think of their strength and depth, like Ryan McHugh, one of the top players in Ireland, and you think, you know, who's going to mark Ryan McHugh? And they bring on
Merchant,
like, and not many people have heard of Merchant, but he basically almost, you know, held Ryan McHugh out of the game.
Yeah.
Like, and if they can bring a fella on off the bench who, like, no one had really heard of, but mark one of the opposition's best players, like, what hope do the rest of us have?
They have, yeah. Merchant's a speed demon. Now, Merchant marked him well, but McHugh could have had 3 or 4 from play if he had his shooting boots on. Like, he didn't, Merchant was tagging him all over the field. You could see this on the TV off the ball, that when the play wasn't around, Merchant wasn't following the play, he was just turned facing straight at McHugh, and that's demoralising, because for Roy McHugh, who likes to have that free roll, and when you drop so deep, you like to think, right, well, I've dropped deep enough now, I've got a clear run at it, because usually players don't follow you that deep, but Merchant followed him everywhere. It always used to break my heart that if I was playing corner forward and I was told, right, you have a free roll, go on out there. And I'm like, ah, lovely, usually that's a great roll. But then the cornerback man marks you everywhere in the field. It's like, oh Christ, I'll actually just go back in the corner. I'll have you, yeah. I'd actually have an easier time back in the corner than that. But that's what Merchant did. And like, I mean, the changes for Dublin made loads of sense. Jack McCaffrey came in, Keane O'Sullivan came in, Merchant man Mark McHugh. Like, I mean, Howard went wing forward. He was outstanding. We'll talk about him in performance of the weekend. But like, I mean, Dublin, tactically, usually Dublin get it spot on.
Yeah, I mean, and there's only so many goals Ryan McHugh can score against Dublin before Jim Gavin starts thinking, Jesus, I better do something about this fella. So just man mark him, because he always just find that space when you don't man mark him.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. But like, I mean, I don't know, it's hard. Like, I mean, Donegal looked to me like Jamie Brennan's chance, where it's given in high and McFadden knocks it down to him. Unbelievably bad defending, which you're not used to by Dublin, that Keane O'Sullivan jumped with Fitzsimons. Like, Keane O'Sullivan never jumps with the defender. What was he thinking? Knocks it down to Brennan. Brennan's not a finisher, I don't think, as much as a lethal. Brennan would never do a dummy solo and tap it into an empty net. He's an all-out ball winner and can kick great scores and might get the odd good goal, but I don't think he has that composure when he gets a chance, you know, like that in front of Hill 16. But, like, I mean, that was the obvious thing for Donegal. And we saw with Laois against Dublin, they had a clear game plan to give the diagonal ball to Donny Kingston and Evan O'Carroll. I didn't see Donegal had a clear game plan to take advantage of perceived weakness in the Dublin fullback line. I think these two balls just happened. They might have talked about it, but I don't think it happened enough for them to actually get joy out of it.
Yeah, well, I definitely think that, you know, one of Dublin's weak points is the high ball into the fullback line. You know, they do struggle with it when it comes in like that. But I'm not sure if Donegal planned for that, if that was in their game plan. But if they did, they probably just didn't do it enough. And like, I don't understand why they don't put Michael Murphy in, you know, in around that danger zone. Like, they were talking in the Sunday game last night, and Sean Kavanagh was saying, look, maybe Donegal feel that they don't have enough quality out around the middle to be able to sacrifice Michael Murphy there to bring him into the forwards. But I just thought like Dublin were there for the taking. Like, they weren't at their usual top level, and you know, there was a couple of missed chances Donegal missed, like Jamie Brennan's chance that could have been a goal. But like, when you miss chances against teams that are expecting to beat you, like it's happened with us in Fermanagh against in the Ulster final. Like, when you miss those early chances, it just kind of it saps your confidence, like, because you, for the whole week before it, you're thinking, right, let's get a few early scores here, settle yourself into the match, and it gives you confidence. But Donegal, you know, missed those early chances. But even saying that, it was level for, you know, after the 20 minutes, and then I think Scully's goal then kind of again, like, when Dublin score a goal on you, it saps the energy out of you.
That was straight after Brennan's miss.
Which is unreal. And like, it was Brennan's second goal that ended as a contest that put 8 in it, the second goal, and that's lights out then at that stage. The first goal, you'd say, but like, I mean, you look at it, Laois were within a point or two of Dublin after 30 minutes. Dublin haven't been firing this year yet. Like, no. I mean, they've been going through the motions and getting over teams, and you'll understand it against Laois. But like, I mean, Dublin just didn't kick on against Donegal. They had them beaten, and it's almost like, I think in a way, Dublin are like, after what Donegal did to them in 2014, Donegal don't really care about hammering them. They want to embarrass this system. They want to show this system up, and that's what they were doing. Like, they were 8 points up. They decided to stop playing just to try and say, look how stupid this is that they're playing. Honestly, I actually think that's it. That they're actually showing up how kind of negative it is to keep your men back hoping for a counterattack. And we're like, butcher, we're not going to give you that counterattack. So what are you going to do now? And Donegal didn't want to do anything else. Like, I mean, I do think that's what Dublin are at. Honestly, I think Dublin, and I think Kilkenny's driving it. I think Kilkenny is driving, let's show this up for what it is, lads. If we get ahead of them. I'd say they're
you
having those
that's
chats.
That's why he's fisting it back, like a big massive wind up.
Telling you.
An ironic fist pass, maybe it is.
That's exactly what he's doing. He's just saying, look at the state of this. Now, having said that, his club plays like that. So maybe he knows kind of the pitfalls of it.
I was thinking they were just doing it just to see it out and maybe save legs for next week, and maybe it was like in a way to show the other two teams who are coming up against that if you do this, you're going to get embarrassed, put a bit of pressure on them to come out at them.
Yeah.
Get the scores a bit easier, because when Donegal came out, you just walk past them.
Maybe it's a message for Tyrone, and they did that to a degree against Tyrone last year. If Tyrone go behind next weekend, you know, it's going to be in their minds.
I'd say Dublin will do it a lot earlier against Tyrone.
Do you think so? Oh, God.
If it's tight enough, like if it's in Healy Park as well and Tyrone are behind, like why would Dublin really take that gamble when Tyrone have been so good?
I've always said that, in that if you're playing a defensive team and you go 3 points up, I'd play it around with my two fullbacks until the other team have to, like, the whole crowd will boo. You'll be booed out of it. Well, whose fault is this? The other team's just waiting there for us. We're ahead. So who's the onus on to get the ball back? It's not us.
Yeah.
The onus shouldn't be on the team that's ahead. The onus should be on the team that's defending it. I really don't want to promote this happening, because it's just going to be, it'll be a farce of the level of Donegal in 2011. Because this hasn't been seen very much before. It happened a little bit with Kerry or with Dublin at the weekend. But if this starts happening in games, it's like, I mean, it's almost going to make a mockery it'll make a mockery of the defensive systems, but it'll almost make a mockery of the way how Gaelic football has gone.
But you're like, and so out of the crowd boo, because I thought on the flip side of it, the Kerry fans are some of them are such idiots. Like, you know, like, they're putting pressure on the team to kick it in, and there's three men hanging off Clifford, and they start booing and going mad when they're not kicking it in, and you're like, what? Is this what you want? Like, so it's obviously two extremes, but let the crowd boo if you're doing that when the other team is just put everybody back and you're ahead.
Yeah, no, it's exactly right. Just quickly on the kickouts, Les, the stats on the kickouts are fairly clear as well. So Dublin won 23 of their 25, nothing surprising there. Fenton was outstanding in the second half on the kickouts. Cluxton, we know what he's like. Donegal really set the tone early. Patton with a few very early terrible
ones.
Man. Yeah, your man.
Talking him up in third.
They only won 15 from 25, so they're nearly almost at maybe 55-60%, which is fairly poor, considering they weren't driving all of them aimlessly. Like, I mean, they were just going wrong. You know, Patton wasn't able for the push up, and you know, you just wonder, why are you going for these short ones when Dublin are so good? My theory on Dublin, when they aggressively press you up so high and they're so bloody strong, get that ball into midfield. Yeah. Just get it out far as you can. You've all your men goal side. You won't concede. You know, you won't mess up and put your goalie under pressure. Drive it out. Yeah. Now, you have Fenton to deal with, but put it Michael Darragh McCauley's side. You know, drag Fenton the other side. Michael Darragh is not a brilliant fetcher.
Yeah.
Surely you can have someone compete with Michael Darragh. You have a 50-50 chance. You're not screwing him up. You're not giving him turnovers high up the field. Dry it out.
Yeah, well, like, the kick-out stats nowadays are kind of, you know, if someone didn't tell you the score of the match, but you had to guess the who won on kickouts, you could make a good hazard good guess who won the match. Like, you know, when you're you know, losing 10 of your own kickouts, like, it's just, it causes a bit of panic through the team. Like, and it comes back to, again, like, you know, when you're losing your own kickouts, I keep coming back to this phrase, but it saps the energy and the confidence out of you. So, as you were saying, like, that Dublin, when Dublin press up on you, like, it's scary, I'd say, for Patton taking that case. Like, but he's probably told to, you know, get the short away, you know, even if they are pushed up. But, like, it did put him under a lot of pressure, and, you know, it's his first season, and, like, he's had an excellent season so far, and, you know, he'd be a wee bit disappointed with how yesterday went. But he should have been told, if he didn't know already, to just thump it long, like, and take your chances, get in for the breaks, and, you know, keep it away from Fenton, who is having a field day. But Dublin, like, when they push up on kickouts, like, it's just, they're very, very good at it. Like, they're probably the best at it.
Yeah, that's the thing. And, like, I mean, you're going long, driving it as far as you can. Like, you can have tactics around getting in under that break and make sure you're half forward line. The three of them, when you know which side it's going, that they're all coming in under that break, and you're winning it. And look where you are when you win it then. I don't get it, but I'm not an inter-county manager, and I don't know, there's obviously a reason. I think you go to the corner back all the time, and look how far you have to bloody carry it. There's the chance of turnovers up the field. The other team will have got back. By the time you reach 45, you're in a stalemate situation. Like, there's when other teams are pushing up, when you go long, that's a one chance in a game that you're guaranteed to have one-on-ones on the other side if you can, like, win it.
Galway on Sunday did it. Like, they were going long when Kerry were pressing up.
Yeah, Lavelle's kickouts were great. Yeah,
they had a great flight on them as well, and they just had so many boys gravitating to either wing wherever he was putting it, and they usually won the breaks or the high ball. And yeah, it was a lot safer than what Kerry were doing, because you saw the pressure Kerry were under then. Like, that's sort of the dynamic you come into them with Dublin. That's the choice you have. Like, do you kick it long, compete in the middle, or do you just spend all your energy trying to get out with men hounding you down? And you usually have more men than you have backs there, because they commit bodies.
Yeah, Declan Bonner says, I've just felt there was more in us. Maybe it was just that belief, just to get over the line against Dublin. So I don't know, like, if he's saying there was more in us, I don't know. Like, sometimes maybe players on the field, naturally, because they're coming from a culture of very defensive, might just naturally fall back into those positions, you know, especially against Dublin. But definitely think it was very weird that Donegal allowed Dublin do that, lads.
Were
I don't
care
keeping
for the score down for the
maybe
stage?
Well, that's another thing, because that is a good result against Dublin in Croke Park for Donegal, arguably, you know. Like, I mean, now what they have to do, although I suppose after Tyrone hammered Roscommon, then it didn't really make sense, did it? Because they're never going to better that result.
Yeah,
you know, so look, it's hard to know. It's hard to know why. Like, I mean, why they wouldn't just come out and engage and try and get that ball back? And what, like, Desi Dolan set the tone on the co-comp by blaming Dublin for that. Like, that's not Dublin's fault. Yeah. It's just not Dublin's fault. And Ger Canning blamed them as well. And like, it's amazing the influence they have. That suddenly on Twitter, then this is all Dublin's fault. And I'm getting tweets going, oh, why don't you give out about Dublin the way you give out about
football?
Yeah. And I'm like, they're only doing it in response to the other team. Donegal dictated what Dublin did there, not the other way around. It's almost like we're winning, and you want us to go up there, get turned over, and give them what they want. Give me a break. It's just nonsense.
They just spent 65 minutes making sure they win the match, and now they don't need to do any more with the other team.
Yeah.
Sort of want them to come.
They're
in.
Back there waiting for us.
Why know what they're doing.
We're winning. Why would we even go down there? Right, listen, lads, we've gone over time there. We'll come back with performance of the weekend. Here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got, because I don't want
no one in it, man. All right, first nomination for performance of the weekend is Richie Donnelly. Lads, he got 1-4. 1-4 from play, which was an outstanding performance by him from a scoring point of view. But I think in the second half, Tyrone actually used him a little bit more, and not only did he use him a little bit more, the whole thing I've been banging on about here, they had men coming off him, which is like unbelievable. Now, I do think Tyrone are initially, they are conservative team, and when they realise here these lads are there for the take, and then they'll pull out an array of attacking threats. But at the start, the running game destroyed Roscommon, and then by the end they showed us that they have another string to their bow.
Yeah, like, I'm not sure how much you can read into maybe the last 15-20 minutes of that game, because like Roscommon kind of threw in the towel. But I suppose getting back to Richie Donnelly, Richie was in school with me in St. Michael's, Enniskillen. A very, very good, footballer. Both feet. He's good spatial awareness. He can bring other lads in. He's a big, strong target man. And, you know, over the last couple of years, he's been unlucky with injuries. And his brother, Matty, he's probably got received all the accolades. And I was delighted now to see Richie play as well as he did on Saturday and get 1-4. And what I like about Richie is too, he can bring in other players as well, because he can take a score, but he also has the vision, and he also has that presence of mind to bring other players into it. But I suppose Richie would know himself that he'd be coming up against, you know, tougher defences than Roscommon's. Like, I mean, like, I have a massive soft spot for Roscommon, but they just don't seem to want to defend or something. They want to play, you know, real lovely attacking football, and it's grand against Armagh. Like it's a great two teams going at that style, and it's great to watch. And Roscommon have fantastic players, but when you come up when you come up against Tyrone, you almost have to play that system as well, or you're just going to get, they're just going to eat you up.
But they kind of did mirror them. Like, I mean, they got plenty of men back. They just were doing nothing. And it's how easy Tyrone were able to break the tackle, glide past them, and then give it off to a runner, and they're through. Like, I mean, you don't get through teams that easily. Like, I mean, you shouldn't. I thought the idea that to play Fintan Craig and Devenny, who are two forwards in the half back line, I thought that was a great idea from a attacking point of view, to push on up there and give them something to think about. I thought playing McManus at full back, who's a wing back and a fast wing back, he played at full back, but I thought he was going to be following someone else out the field, and thought this is a very offensive team from Roscommon, and it's actually something I would have done. But when you look at it, none of those lads were working hard enough. Like, they weren't working hard enough. Like, it's the most basic thing when you play Tyrone. You have to match them for work rate. When they make their counter-attack runs, you have to track them. And Roscommon just didn't look like they had the appetite or the work rate to track them. So picking loads of forward players is grand, but these forward players have to be programmed to bloody work, or else or else we can't play, lads. Because we talked about this, backs versus forwards. The backs always win because they work harder than forwards, and that's the reality. And I thought that the modern game now, that forwards were programmed to not be that kind of lazy, kind a little bit lazier than defenders like they were when I was playing, that they were actually had a huge appetite for work. Roscommon didn't look like they had an appetite for that hard work against Tyrone, and Cork immediately, you're gone. If you can't match Tyrone for that, they're hard runners. Sure, where are you going to go against Tyrone? Like, they make a show of you.
But it's amazing how many teams they have made a show of, and they're just not, like, everyone knows what's happening, but they just don't ever seem to be up for it.
Tyrone are powerful now, though, aren't they? They've got a big team again, big, like, big, strong. The arms on Donnelly and McCann, strong, and all these lads. Men. Yeah,
and like, so, like, all Tyrone scores, bar one, I think, from play, were around the 21 metre mark. They're on the 21 metre mark or inside it. Like, they're just walking through you, like, as much as they want, even though they don't have anybody in the full forward line.
Yeah.
Usually they start off with. But, like, the way they're able to just bat these teams away, like, I looked it up, only Dublin and Kerry in the last 2 years are averaging more scores than Tyrone, even though Tyrone are such a defensive unit.
Yeah, but we've explained that, Conan. You can be still be that they are a defensive team. They just,
like,
get their,
I'm not even getting into a defensive, like, you know, what's good and bad. I'm just saying that this team are setting up with everybody back, and they're still averaging over 23 points a game.
Yeah.
And teams like Roscommon, who won the Connacht last year, who are back in Division 1, they're just flinging them out of the way. Scores, more, like, double their goals, double their points, and absolutely beat them out of sight.
It's massive. And they did the same to Armagh last year. Like, Tyrone really have the ability just to blow teams away with this running game. And, like, I wouldn't fancy losing the ball in my 45 and having to track Peter Hart or McCann, or, like, I mean, I'd be like, Jesus. Because when you lose the ball, your natural instinct is to drop your head a little bit. You're like, oh, it's lost. And by the time you've kind of regrouped to where they're gone, like, slugging's up under your far 45. Like, the two big turning points of the first half, because Roscommon were competitive, was Enda Smith's terrible ball, intercepted by Sludden, immediately gone, goal. Not long after that, it was Tygo Rourke brought the ball into contact. These two balls were given away on the 45. Against Tyrone, that's suicide. You're gone. If you give away a turnover that far up the field, Tyrone are ready to springboard off there, and there's five of them gone, and they're running at different angles, and they're just going to make a show out of you. So, like, I mean, that put 4 points between the teams, and I think Roscommon were kind of gone at that stage, and Roscommon were beginning to tire. They started off really brightly and were getting through. It's hard to keep that up for long against that kind of that intensive tackling.
Tyrone were on their game yesterday, and it just, Roscommon, like, you can kind of compare the Tyrone defensive setup. It's like this kind of spider's web in their own 45, and Roscommon, like, the players were, like, running in and getting bottled up by three Tyrone players, and then when Tyrone turned it over, it's just like, it's like this barrage of fighter jets, and about four of them go, and they're flat out. And, like, that just, I think that just sapped the energy from Roscommon. And I think the game was over, really, at half time, nearly, you could say.
Yeah, I know it was. It was over. Roscommon had run out of ideas. One thing I did think of Roscommon when I was watching the game, and this is Paddy Power performance of the weekend, but we're going to have to get a little bit, we want to cover all four games, that Roscommon kind of was weird. Like, they were dropping everybody back bar Craig and Murta. Like, I mean, obviously some of them were following Tyrone players, but that's the reality. They had this many men back on some occasions, but they were dotted around in weird positions. Like, two could be on the top of the D, almost covering a full forward line that Tyrone aren't going to kick it to anyways in that situation. And there wasn't enough out around the 45, and Tyrone were just maybe two hand passes.
Yeah.
And they're through that. And then the two lads inside are watching a lad coming at him at pace, at sidestepping us over. You know,
yeah.
Like against Tyrone, because Tyrone aren't mad about kicking it in, why not just have all your men along the 45 and really get that contact area, kind of hit them hard on that 45. I can't see Tyrone, because they're not programmed to kick, you know, kicking it over that screen into the two men, because if they win that there, they're running out and your men on the 45 are going to turn around and kind of gobble them up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think Roscommon had their defensive structure all arseways.
See, I don't think Roscommon are coached to play that system.
No,
I think all year they're playing, you know, they're the nice attacking brand that you've seen against Armagh, and you've seen how good they were at that. Like, that's their game. So what they were trying to do against Tyrone is they were trying to play a system that they just haven't been coached on all year. And when you've seen that, when they tried to do it, they just were bad at it.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. And Tyrone just picked them off for easy scores. And, you know, I was reading Kevin McStay in his post-match press conference yesterday. You know, he was deflated, and he was saying we need to actually look at this in Roscommon. You know, do we want to continue, you know, at Division 2 and we're getting through it, but to really get to the top tier, we need to be able to play like Tyrone and Galway. Like, and he was saying the Roscommon football public mightn't like that, because I know down in Roscommon they like to play, you know, the nice kick pass and, you know, the nice attack and play. But
yeah,
he was saying, you know, what you know, there's going to be a bit of soul searching here, not in the next couple of weeks because they don't have time, but you know, if they want to really push on, they need to develop this defensive game. And it mightn't please the Rossies down there, but it's, you know, Kevin McStay is, I think he's spot on.
Yeah, that's sad, you see, because this is the reality of the way it is. The game is gone. Trying to come out and play football doesn't work against these teams, because they're just going to hurt you and you're not coached in it and whatever. So I have that quote from Kevin McStay, and it's very, very interesting. He says, because that's the way we play, talking about playing offensively and picking forwards that are scorers rather than workers, and like, it's just sad that doesn't work. It's sad. So he says, because that's the way we play, which is easy to play against, but it's the type of football that, you know, I'm not sure the Roscommon supporters will go and watch if we changed our style dramatically and if we started looking at a Galway model or something like that. Bit harsh on Galway there, but anyways, whether our supporters would want that, whether our players would want that. But now going into the next level, at that elite level, perhaps it's going to take some big strategic decisions in style and personnel. So there you go. Like, you could be losing Roscommon off the, like, their half forward line could end up from Cahill. Murta could find himself on the bench tomorrow while a worker takes his place, and just left with two scorers inside. Just, that's the reality. Like, I mean, that's pretty much what Kevin McStay is saying here. So this is why we keep banging on and banging on about the modern game and everything. Nothing will change, because you can't compete by trying to go offensively. So rabbiting on about it, the only thing to save the way the game's going, I think, is those rule changes that we discussed.
Yeah, like, the game does change though, and positions change. Remember that handy old position about 10 years ago, number 15, that you were allowed to just, you said, you were allowed to score around the middle? You can't do that anymore, but that was perfectly suited for some players. But just because that suits you now, it doesn't mean that the game has to stay that way, you know, to suit that particular player. Like, Dublin have like all these amazing quality players who get to show that, but they are able to do the other side of the job as well, and they're able to track. Yeah.
I'm all on for the game evolving, but like, it is evolving to a bore fest. That's my problem. Like, I mean, there's no problem. Like, Tyrone, just to quickly finish up in Tyrone, they were absolutely clinical. I think it was 20 scores off 24 shots was a stat that came up on Sky during the game. Like, I mean, they were outstanding, and it's just set up a brilliant game against Dublin next year, and hopefully the home advantage might be able to make it a little bit more competitive than last year.
The test for Tyrone is going to be, are the runs going to, like, when they turn it over, are they going to be as positive and as immediate? Are they all going to go, like, you know, they don't delay. As soon as the ball's turned over, they go.
No, but they won't get the turnovers on the 45. They might get turnovers on their full back line, which just you can't counter attack from the full back line.
Yeah.
You know, you can counter attack really well from a turnover 45 or midfield. Dublin won't give them to them. That's the reality. Dublin won't give them those turnovers.
Yeah. And do you go anyway, because, like, you know, the Dublin lads are going to track you the whole way, and then you know you're going to have to track down the whole way back. So it just, I think it just gets into their heads a bit more, yeah. And to use Tomás's phrase, it saps their energy a bit, yeah. When they're thinking about it.
I don't think Tyrone can beat Dublin. I don't think that system can beat Dublin. I genuinely don't. But look, I think Tyrone will get a lot closer to them this time. It won't be a hammering like it was in Croke Park. That was a one off.
They don't like Healy Park though.
No.
No, they don't really like Healy Park.
Well, funny on that, I don't think the Tyrone players really like Healy Park either.
Sean Calvin,
I was saying that. Yeah, just from talk, I'll not name them, like, but they were saying, you know, home advantage in Healy Park doesn't really mean that much because there's not that much history, and they just don't feel a connection to it, I don't think. But it'll be an interesting match.
It will be. So the other performance of the weekend contender, Paddy Power performance of the weekend contender, is Carl O'Connell. I love Carl O'Connell. I love watching him. The speed of him, like I was saying last Thursday, is Jack McCaffrey level of pace. It's just like you cannot buy these type of players. He's another one of these lads, didn't start playing football seriously till he was 22. Like, I mean, Malachy Clercombe was telling me that at the match yesterday, like, which is unreal. I don't know, did he make your All-Ireland team that didn't play minor under 21, Conan? But he scored 3 points from wing back, got two against Leash, obviously got a lovely one off the outside of his boot, could have got a goal, and then one off the inside of his boot, showed a full array of kicking points talent from wing back. Niall Kearns in midfield was outstanding for Monaghan as well, and he's a real find. You've obviously got Kieran Hughes now, can come on in the forwards, he's back fully fit. Monaghan are looking good. Monaghan were the better team. Kildare couldn't really break them down, Tomás. They just couldn't break them down. I do take the point that Kildare have come through a lot of difficult games. They just ran out of ideas with Monaghan.
Yeah, they ran out of ideas. I think the conditions played a bit of a big role in the game. I think Monaghan played the conditions better than Kildare. I think they were talking on Sky, it was the first time in maybe 6 weeks that there had been any rain, so, you know, they weren't able to practice, you know, in those conditions. But Kildare could have won. Like, they had chances in that last 10 minutes to win it. I think Daniel, the very last attack, I think it was, or one of the last attacks, Daniel Flynn had a chance. He got the ball out.
Yeah, he didn't take on his man. I thought he should have there. Like, it was a weird one.
You see, I thought he had a poor enough second half. He wasn't really involved, so maybe he just didn't back himself. But he made a poor choice in a kick pass, got turned over, and then the ball goes up the pitch, and Conor McManus does what he does, and he gets the insurance point. But Kildare actually did have a couple of chances to win it, and even as, you know, they didn't hit the kind of high levels of energy that they had against us and against Mayo, they still could have snuck a result. But, you know, Monaghan look good. Like, they look back to themselves. They look, you know, they're working really hard, and I think, you know, their defensive, again, like, it's their performance is built on being defensively solid, and like Kildare, I think, didn't really have any answer for Monaghan's hunger and intensity, you know, when they got into that scoring zone.
Intensity in the tackle, like, I mean, like Ross Munley mentioned last week, is just to leave something on you, is what he said. And, like, when you add the wet conditions into that, Kildare got really frightened about bringing into contact. And, like, I mean, they played Kevin Feely full forward for nearly the whole game. Like, it was a bizarre decision. And I was asking someone in Kildare, was he injured? And I think he had a calf injury and he wasn't 100%. Because they lost him from midfield, they lost him from kickouts. And at full forward, I thought he was only getting in Daniel Flynn's way. What was, like, I mean, if you've Daniel Flynn there, you want to keep as much space in there free for him. He was being marked by Duffy. He didn't have the pace to get away from Duffy. He was making some runs out in front, and it's like, stop, that's Daniel Flynn's run. Yeah. Like, but he was obviously carrying a knock, because, like, I hope he was carrying a knock, or else it was just a bizarre decision from Kildare.
He definitely didn't look 100%. He was out around the middle to start off with, and he just wasn't the usual Kevin Feely that you're used to. He wasn't as sprightly, he wasn't coming onto the ball. It's a tough decision. Like, would you rather keep him on somewhere, or would you take him
centre
off?
Centre half forward, maybe. I don't know. You could like to keep him around that middle third, but maybe if he doesn't have the legs for that, you know, so maybe the full forward line was there for him. I don't know. Like, I mean, he didn't fit in there anyways with the two Flynns.
No, I don't think so. It's interesting. Like, I saw Sean Kavanagh last night saying that Monaghan have been perfecting his system for years, but really sure what their system is. It's just, like, based on heart and, you know, honesty, and boys, like, ruthless tackling. Like, you know, everybody just going hell for leather at it. They've got like a 0.5 man full forward line where McManus goes in and then sometimes he helps out as well and everybody's back. But it's not really this, it's not like Galway where you can see exactly what they're doing. Everybody is just pure honest with Monaghan.
No, they are. They've got fierce, that's a great word to describe them. They've got serious honesty. Like, I mean, and they shut down Kildare's main men as well. Like, I mean, Vinnie Corey took Paul Cribben out of the game completely. Yeah. And that was always a thing with Monaghan. They have defenders that can take the opposition's main men out. They've got great man markers and tight man markers and strong man, you know what I mean? They get your hands on and they give you there's nothing you get easy against them, Tomás.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. Yeah, they do. They have probably a couple of the best defenders playing at the minute. Like Drew Wiley and Ryan Wiley are two really tough defenders. Like, playing when you're playing Monaghan, like, you know you're not going to get anything easy. And Vinnie Corey, like Vinnie does that man marking role nearly every game. Like, yeah, against Tyrone, he held Matty Donnelly
yeah,
fairly.
Not many lads get the better of him.
No, and
like, he's man marked Michael Murphy as well, and he's not getting the kick off him.
Yeah, and like, who was it on the podcast last week? One of the Stevie McDonald, I think, was saying, you know, Monaghan, you know, if they're relying on guys like Vinnie Corey and Desi Moan. But Vinnie Corey has been one of Monaghan's best players for maybe the last year or something.
Yeah, Desi Moan worked Fergal Conway, like man to man all
did
over the
well on Conway,
well.
Yeah.
So I think those two boys had a point to prove, you know. And they had great games for Monaghan. And what was surprising was Conor McManus didn't have probably his best game. So and Monaghan still got over the line. So if Manzi can click against Kerry, then, you know, Monaghan will be in with a serious shout.
Yeah, exactly. And the one thing about playing the sweeper against Monaghan is that, well, Owen Doyle drops off his man all the time, but, like, I mean, Carl O'Connell's just free on the other side. Why you can't do that? So Paddy Brophy's trying to keep his eye on him and he's kind of standing goal side of him, but way away from him. And it's like, because they were trying to free up Owen Doyle, so Paddy Brophy's going back to kind of keep a watch on Owen Doyle's man, so he kind of has someone else and he's trying to look up and see where Carl O'Connell is.
Yeah.
It's like, mate, don't leave Carl O'Connell free. But, like, I mean, Monaghan will rejig it and get him free, and then he's a free man. And imagine the danger that you have if this fella's a free man.
When we talked about Ryan McHugh, I mean, you get to the stage now where you just have to follow him, at least have a player on him who's going to track him. Like, don't just leave him as their spare man. It's crazy.
Yeah, no,
you can't let him get a run on you. Like, you have to, if he gets the ball, you have to be touching him straight away, because the first four steps he takes, some players are fast over first 10 meters. He actually accelerates, you know, he gets quicker the faster
as he's going on.
Quite like Shane Walsh is the same. So when Carl O'Connell gets the ball, he normally kind of sits out on the wing and he waits for that pass, and then he goes, like, and he's either going to be fouled or in was it the first or the second half where he got that score, he came powering through the middle, took a shot and was saved, and he, like, that was a great score. Right. He fisted it over. Like, the ball was spinning, it was wet, and he knew he could only fist it over. Like, it was a very, very good score. He got man of the match on TV, and he had a great interview. Like, he was nice and smiley. Yeah, no, compared to Niall Scully.
Did he act like a human being?
He acted like a human. You know, he was delighted with the award. He was smiling, and it almost felt like he was going to jump out of the screen.
Oh, lovely!
It was great. So now he's.
Jeez, I like him even more now. Yeah. Just because he acted like a human being. God, who would have thought it? Who would have thought it? He acted normally after playing really well and getting an award for that.
Well, Niall Scully still scored more than him, so.
Okay, well, sure, we've one or two more nominations. So Ian Burke, we mentioned him already, he's a live wire, so, like, I mean, he was outstanding throughout. Brian O'Buglock was taken off him at half time. Tom Sullivan went on him then. He caused him all sorts of problems. His movement is absolutely out of this world, and when you've got that kind of speed and jinky movement and you're that small, he's just, oh god, imagine marking this fella. And again, he throws it around so well. We've talked about him a bit before. Brian Howard, I've never seen Brian Howard playing as well as he played the other night. I don't know why he was taken off, unless he was carrying a knock or trying to keep him fresh. Went wing forward. The sidestep of him, like, I've mentioned this before, he's got Jarlath Fallon type, like, this pronounced sidestep. It's just a natural ability he has. It's beautiful. He was getting marks. He was scoring points from play.
he was absolutely outstanding. And him and Scully on both wings, and like you're talking about Flynn, like you said, and Connolly, like neither of them have Connolly's class, but they've got qualities Connolly doesn't have. You don't see Connolly fetching kickouts like Howard. You don't see Connolly throwing a sidestep and breaking through the line. Like Connolly will play on the outside and give a lovely ball in. Howard's got one or two qualities that Connolly doesn't have.
Yeah, it's good that you brought up Connolly, because I remember it's always good when you bring up Connolly. But I remember during the league, or remember at that stage where he was going to miss Freshers game, Sigerson game, because he was going to play for Dublin, and I think I made a snide remark, something like, but he's not going to make the Dublin team in the championship anyway.
I think I could have agreed with you back then.
Like, how far are we away from that now? Like, he is one of the key men, like, and everything he does is right, and he must be Stephen Clarkson's favourite player, because he just finds him all the time. He's always running into space, always seems to have 30 yards of space, catches it in his chest, turns around, goes again. So athletic, great right foot, he's absolutely brilliant. He's flying.
Yeah, he's absolutely flying. What do you think?
Yeah, no, flying. I had written down here outstanding beside Brian Hardy. I just thought he was one of the best performances that I can remember. You know, for the first half especially, he was just brilliant. Like he was taking men on. That sidestep, like it's so bulletproof. Like if he sidesteps, you're gone. Like he made a clean catch. And he's 2 feet, and like as you were saying, he always takes the right option. Like we played Rahini in the Dublin Club Championship, and he it wasn't like he was doing anything spectacular, but he just always, the kick, if it was a 30-yard kick pass, was right in the chest.
Yeah, where does he play for them?
He was playing kind of centre back,
right?
And like, you wouldn't think it to kind of look at him that he's going to be a brilliant footballer, but he's kind of so solid, and he does the simple thing unbelievably well. And he was Dublin's, one of Dublin's best players there yesterday, and he's well due his place in that team.
Definitely is. And Niall Scully's effortless, that's the word I'd use to describe him. Like, I mean, he's never in a rush. Like, I mean, it just looks like he just kind of has an extra gear to go to. Like, lads are chasing him and he doesn't look like he's running a full pace. It's like, I have this under control.
I hate lads like him.
I
hate to be doing the bleep test beside him.
He's effortless as well though, isn't he? And I mean, he's a serious player. Like, I mean, so Dublin, like, to think that all their talisman didn't play well, but these two fellas kind of step up. Now Scully, in fairness to him, has been stepping up a while. He's been getting a lot, his points from play, he's very impressive. That's, I didn't realise Howard was as good as that. Now maybe that was an outstanding game and he's not that good, but like, I mean, if that's the level he can get to, it's just two more players that are match winners for Dublin, which is a bloody disaster for everybody else. Finally, David Clifford, lads, I want to throw him in because he scored 1-5, 1-4 from play, and like, I mean, he got 1-4, he didn't play that well, but he got 1-4, you know, in his first kind of serious game up in Croke Park. So like, I mean, there's no doubting his brilliance. The points he got were all kind of poacher scores, Tomás, weren't they? It's not like he won it out in front, beat his man, stuck over a screamer. They were almost like getting on the end of a hand passing move and just putting it over. They were tight angles, you know. He kind of showed that he's that lethal finisher. We're waiting to see, I think, with Clifford, the odd audacious long range point, or the odd, you know, he seems to miss those ones. I'm kind of waiting for him to burst into life.
Yeah, well, like, you have to, you'd be cutting him a lot of slack because this is his first year, and he's 19, isn't he? So like that, like, I've no doubt that those quality flamboyant scores from everywhere will be going over, maybe not this season, maybe not even next season, but you know, over his county career, he's going to be just a spectacular footballer. But the scores he got against Galway were, like as you said, real poacher, real quality scores. He didn't have a lot of time to get the shots away, but he got them over.
Tight angles, one tight angle on the left, one tight angle on the right. You know what I mean? Like he's just that lethal finisher.
And you know, to score what was it, 1-4 against that Galway defence. Like, if I scored that against a defence like that, I'd be thinking I had a great game. But
you wouldn't say he played brilliant.
No, you wouldn't say he played brilliant.
He made a few mistakes.
A few mistakes, and like, even as I was watching it, I didn't think he played well. And then I seen in the he actually scored like 1-4. Like, so he when you're not playing well and you're scoring 1-4, yeah, like
in your first ever big game in Croke Park.
Yeah. So
like 1-5 in total, and Kerry only scored 1-10.
Yeah,
like that's scary for Kerry people to read this morning. The fact that this 19-year-old who didn't play that well, as you say, scored what, way more than half their points.
Yeah, geez, I think that sums up Kerry in general. What's the poll results here, Colin? And we'll see whether we go along with it or not. So there's only 4 players we could put into the poll.
Richie Donnelly in 4th place, Tyrone 17%, Card O'Connell Monaghan 3rd place 18%, Ian Burke Galway 28%, and I agree with this one, Brian Howard at the top
37%. Right, so I obviously have the veto on this, and I'm not going to veto it because Brian Howard would have been my pick. I'm glad he got the percentage right. It would have been interesting if we put Niall Scully in there. It's like player of the year. We put 2 in and it dilutes their their percentage, and then they start complaining, well, someone from Mayo wins the right. Okay, so congratulations, Brian Howard. You win the Paddy Power boxer shorts, and we'll be sending them out to you. We'll get your contact details, and congratulations on that. Right, we'll be back. We're in Oma this Thursday night. Or not Oma, Cookstown in Tyrone, for a preview show of Dublin Tyrone. So we'll be doing 2 podcasts. We're doing the football podcast anyway on Wednesday. We'll put it out then. Right, and talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.